welcome back to 2019, fellow proggers. Welcome to the 9-8 podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground down under. My name is David Ellis, and with me every fortnight and returning again for another year of talking crap on the interwebs is Mr. Alex Hogg. How are you, my friend?
Oh, don't sell us so short, Dave. How are you?
I am well. How was your break?
It was good. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. Back to the grindstone, of course, for 2019. The fun never stops.
Always.
Yeah.
As always, I am still looking for work, unfortunately, at least at time of recording. So it is, but I mean, it's time of recording. It's, you know, still 2018 when we're recording this. So it's, you know, it's difficult to think that people are going to be putting me on before New Year's anyway. So
yeah, this is always the problem. It's like between Christmas and New Year's, the whole employment scene just sort of, it goes on holiday too. Nothing happens.
Exactly.
So if you're out of work over Christmas and New Year, unfortunately, you are shit out of luck.
Oh, absolutely, which is rather irritating. But
and
it is
again,
what it
if
is.
Anybody out there has anything in the music or media or journalism space, email Dave.
By all means, please email me at losthope@hotmail.com. No, I'm kidding. There's this thing I should mention this for the listeners. There's this thing that always tends to happen with Hoggy and myself, and that is every single time we finish an episode and we put it up and it goes to air and we get all the people listening and sending us emails and talking to us about it. Inevitably, the next day, like 9 pieces of news drop that are extremely relevant and really want to hear.
We joke, but this has literally happened probably a good half a dozen times.
Yep.
Where something will come out.
Yep.
Like, for example, Spotify settling a $1.6 billion legal case over songwriting credits.
Oh, my God. I can't believe. I mean, I'm glad they kind of settled, but I'm also kind of not glad because it would have been nice to see Spotify get their teeth kicked in, aside from the fact, of course, that we love Spotify because, you know, we are on their platform. But, I mean,
I don't know. $1.6 billion is a pretty big kick in the teeth.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what were they? They got done for using more than, it was like something like 10,000 songs without a proper license from like Neil Young, Tom Petty, Donald Fagen of Steely Dan fame, Weezer, Rage Against the Machine, a few others as well from memory.
I mean, this action has been going on for more than a year and eventually they settled and they're dealing with it. Legal, yeah. In a joint statement, Spotify and the music publisher Wixen said, "The conclusion of that litigation is a part of a broader business partnership between the parties, which fairly and reasonably resolves the legal claims asserted by Wicked Music Publishing related to past licensing of Wixen catalog and establishes a mutually advantaged relationship for the future."
So, translation.
Sounds promising, however.
I was going to say, the translation of that is neither of us want to pay our lawyers anymore, so let's just pay each other some money and pretend it goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm pretty sure they settled last year as well, as in 2017. Who was it? It was two songwriters from memory that they – it was $43 million or $45 million or something like that they – it was something to do with them not paying royalties adequately or some shit.
Here's the article here. In May last year, Spotify agreed to pay $43 million to settle a proposed class action from songwriters spearheaded by David Lowry and Melissa Ferrix. This was a whole collection of songwriters, and they all sort of got together and put a big class action together. They alleged that Spotify had failed to adequately pay royalties for some songs on their service, which should surprise nobody.
Yeah, exactly.
Spotify stiffing people on royalties. There's a shocker.
And in related news, water is still wet.
Yeah, exactly. Water's wet, night follows day. Details at 11.
Oh, man. It's just, oh, man. I from memory, there was another piece of news as well. I'm just going to check our little thing here. Yeah, here it is. Neil Peart has stopped drumming.
Well, again, this could be filed under the same heading of surprise is none. Geddy Lee has been out doing various interviews with his big book of bass. Which, yep. if you can afford the rather steep price tag for it, I'm led to believe is a rather good book.
Right.
If you can get your hands on it. But he's been doing some interviews in America, and inevitably the interviewers want to know what's happening with Rush. Are they ever going to get back together into the studio and, you know, record any more new music? And Getty has basically said, no, that's not going to happen.
See, this is one of the things that really annoys me, because what, generally speaking, when you got these interviews with these people, you know, you get some boffin on a television network of a morning at like 10 o'clock in the morning. And it's something like, you know, the equivalent in Australia of the Today Show or, you know, Good Morning America or whatever it is over there. And their 17-year-old intern is like, oh, Geddy Lee, who's that? Oh, Rush. Oh, they haven't released an album for a while. Let's ask them about that. Yeah. It's just, mate, he's not doing a speaking tour promoting fucking Rush. Let him go. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, it's the inevitable question, though. Everybody wants to know what's happening. Okay, they're not going to tour anymore. Fine. Okay, no problem with that. But are they going to do more music? Is it going to become like a studio thing? Sort of, you know, many bands have stopped touring and, you know, done the studio thing all the way back to the Beatles.
Yeah, true.
So I guess, you know, okay, he doesn't want to tour anymore. Are they going to write new music together? Mm. And Geddy Lee said no. Neil has essentially stopped drumming. He's not drumming anymore. Yeah. He's done. He's finished.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a shame, although not entirely unexpected.
Mm, exactly.
Whether or not the two of them will get back together and do it, like Geddy and Alex Lifeson will get back together and do any music, that remains to be seen.
Yeah,
Alex has obviously been out and about doing a lot of session stuff, and
I was going to say that'd actually be really cool, because I really like Alex Lifeson as a guitarist, not so much as a lead guitarist, but more as like a rhythm sort of riffy sort of guy.
Well, the problem is with that band, the way that the Rush music happened is that they all sort of had to be lead and rhythm at the same time, because there's only three of them. There's not really much of an opportunity to sort of do lead stuff, because you're sort of like, you know, traditional lead stuff, because you've still got to hold down a rhythmic section when you're only in a three-piece. So his style was always sort of melding the two together.
Yeah, well, it's akin to
incredibly well.
Because I would compare him to, you know, like someone like Andrew Summers. Andy Summers is probably better known, I suppose, from the Police.
The Police being three-piece, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, anyway. I find it all very interesting. There's another piece of news that you actually sent to me today, and this is something that we've sort of bellowed about a little bit before, and that is people getting sort of the raw end of the stick when it comes to, you know, other artists within the music industry who are not necessarily musicians. A photographer was actually banned from shooting Arch Enemy after complaining, basically, that they were using his photo to promote a clothing brand, I think, that they're associated with.
Yeah.
Do you see?
This is a popular problem. I mean, not that I need to talk about this to you, being a music photographer, you know, people stealing your stuff.
Uh-huh.
This should be, you know, this should be a surprise to nobody. You know, the concept that you know, oh, you know, you don't need to get paid. You're just doing, it's free promotion and you're doing it for the exposure, you know, and all this sort of, you know, hello, you know, as we've said before, hello, MasterCard, can I pay my bills in exposure?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. This particular guy, I think from memory, I skimmed through the article this afternoon when you sent it to me, and long story short, there's a company called Thunderball Clothing, which the lead singer of Arch Enemy, Alyssa, works quite closely with, and they started basically using his photo as a promotion thing from them. It was like, oh, check out this cool photo. Now here's a link to our stuff and buy it. So the photographer shot an email off to the company and said, hey, normally I charge 500 euros to businesses that have posted work in an unauthorized manner. However, if you want, just donate 100 euros to the Dutch Cancer Foundation. The guy was Dutch. And we'll call it square. So instead of them actually going, yeah, man, like no problems at all, they actually got into a tit for tat over it, and it got to the point where Arch Enemy, either themselves or their management, got involved and basically said
their management got involved,
and said you won't be shooting any further gigs for us at all.
Yeah. It's kind of hilarious, actually, because the band's manager is sort of known about the place as like some sort of known anarchist, which led to a great comment. It's like, not only are there no atheists in foxholes, there are also no anarchists in record label management or in band management, which I thought was a great line.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's kind of really annoying with this, and as a live music photographer myself, is I've had this happen to me where someone has actually knocked off one of my photos. And then I've shot them an email and said, hey, you know, basically either pay up or take it down. And then they get into an argument with you about it. And it's like, oh, but it's great exposure for you. And as you said earlier, it's like, yeah, that's fantastic, but I can't buy, you know, milk and eggs and bread with exposure dollars. They're not a real thing. So
yeah, exactly.
Either take it down or fuck off.
pretty much.
And this is the whole...
it's like, why you no pay me, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And, you know, the thing that's really annoying is when you get really good photographers, and from the look of this guy's work, he's quite good. I mean, that's just absolutely disgusting, the way that he's been treated. And I'm going to come out and say it, and say, you know, the management for Arc Enemy need to pull their fucking head in. Because at the end of the day, this guy has done them a service, and by discounting, I mean, realistically what he did is he said to them, this is my normal rate, I'm going to discount it to you by 80% fucking, and the money's not even going to go to me, it's going to go to a cancer charity, and these fuckwits want to fucking argue with that.
Yeah, he also goes on to talk about in the article about some bands expect to have with photographers. They let them come into the pit, expect to have absolute and perpetual right to use the photos and whatever they want and pay the photographers in exposure. Mm. And goes on to name check several artists who have done this in the past.
Well, Taylor Swift,
Lady Gaga, and the Foo Fighters apparently have all had these sorts of contracts with photographers in the pit.
That's right. So
which
Taylor
I find
Swift,
that's amazing.
Taylor Swift tried to do it out here at her last show, and the one, I think from memory, the one before. So the Redemption Tour and 1989, those two world tours. And it came out that she was basically making people sign waivers that said, no, we own all the rights to the photos. And a whole bunch of photojournalists in Australia went, no, fuck off, they're my photo. Get fucked.
Pay up or I'm not doing it.
Well, not even pay up. I mean, there was a guy, I won't go into all the specifics about it, but a particular music magazine here in Australia, who recently got up at a lot of their staff photographers, not even staff photographers, a lot of them are volunteers and contributors and such, basically saying, you know, you don't shoot for yourself when you're there. You shoot for the magazine, and that's it. I don't want to see these photos on your Flickr account. I don't want to see them on your Facebook or anything. It's got nothing to do with you. It all goes to this particular company. When I found out about it, I confronted the guy and I said, mate, you can't do that. These guys are volunteers. They actually own the copyright to the image, you know? And then he wanted to spruik off and tell me about how he was really respected in the industry and he knew his shit and all that sort of stuff. So I just fucking left alone.
I can pretty well guarantee you that they don't.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I can pretty well guarantee, you sort of know enough to be dangerous in a sort of way where they just sort of know enough to try and sort of squash any arguments for people who want to complain about it.
Correct.
So what if you're not paying them? And you're not signing them into a contract to work for you and your magazine, then how the hell do you have copyright over whatever they produce?
Mm. And from what I understand as well, in that particular magazine, a lot of the people who were there had to organise their own stuff anyway, because they would apply for things through their system, which they had with the application and all that sort of stuff. They'd apply for it, and then they'd say that no one would get back to them on stuff. So they'd end up contacting, you know, the management companies or the touring companies or whomsoever and say, hey, I shoot for these guys. Have you got my application? Oh, no, we didn't get it. You know, so then they'd have to end up organizing their own stuff. Like the guys weren't even doing their fucking job. And then they expected people basically to hand over the rights to their photos. Fuck off.
Yeah, exactly. That's pretty poor.
Yeah, it's piss poor. But that's how the photographers in the music industry are treated.
Yeah, well, the point I was sort of kind of get to is I picked this up from a photography forum on Facebook.
Yep.
And there were a lot of comments underneath saying, yeah, this is why I don't shoot in the music business, because the music business is just where pimps and thieves run free.
Basically,
and
yeah.
And, yeah, everybody gets screwed in this respect. You know, photographers just sort of, you know, they get the shaft and that's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, that's that. But I just thought we best bring that up, because to be really honest with you, I mean, I'm not a massive fan of Arch Enemy, but hearing stuff like that makes me not want to go and see them.
Yeah, or not shoot for them anyway.
Well, I probably know,
someone comes to you and goes, "Hey, do you want to shoot for Arch Enemy?" You probably go, "Nah, not interested."
Exactly. Exactly.
I want to do it. I've heard their practices. Why would you do it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It's interesting. Like, you know, I was listening to another podcast, Hello Internet, and they were talking about YouTube Rewind. You familiar with the concept?
Uh huh. Yep.
Yeah. Most downvoted video ever on YouTube now overtook a Justin Bieber video, which I think is hilarious. But anyway, and they were like, you know, YouTube was saying to these creators, "Oh, I feel so honored to be in YouTube Rewind," and it's like, yeah, honor seems to me in this context to be like exposure.
Uh-huh.
It's just it's a fake thing that, you know, you should be getting paid, but instead you should feel honored to be chosen, or yeah, it's great exposure for you or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who got an email. She's a country pop, not even country really, just a pop artist that uses sort of, think Alanis Morissette kind of stuff. And okay. Cool music. I produced one of her songs the other day, and I helped her with some production on one of her songs the other day. And we were talking about that and so on and so forth. And she said, "Oh, you know, I got contacted the other day by this company, and they want to put me on a compilation album that they're going to distribute through some of the street press in New York and so on and so forth." And I said, "Oh, that's really cool." And she said, "Yeah." So she said they need $150 or whatever it was. And I said, "Whoa, hang on, what?"
What? Wait, what? They want you to pay them for the company? No.
That's right. And that was literally my question. I said, no, no, no. If you are paying them, it's nothing more than advertising, and you're way better off dumping $150 into your Facebook account or into, you know, a combination of different things, you know, doing a music video, trying to get that promoted and all that sort of stuff, than paying some two-bit company over in the US to put something on a compilation disc that mightn't even get taken up, you know.
And what's it going to do? Distributed by street teams?
Well, yeah, it goes into like the equivalent of, for example, the I don't know what the equivalent would be over in Perth, but in Sydney we had like the MX magazine, which was a street press thing here for a while that's now dead, as is most street press.
Probably the equivalent here probably would have been Express magazine. Which used to be a magazine, but now, as far as I can work out, is an entirely online production now. I think they've given up trying to press the magazines.
Yeah.
Because, partly, you know, they would just get, you know, put in big piles, and it was like a take one if you want one in like a music club or whatever. But I think they all just ended up as like landfill at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So anyway.
So she'll shift with the times on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
We've digressed a little bit.
We've digressed. We've gone on to exposure now.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of exposure, here's a plug for some people that we think deserve a bit of exposure. The Ocean are touring for Progfest, as most people who are going to Progfest would know, but they're doing a sideshow.
Yes, they have announced more shows.
Yes.
They will be touring. They are doing a few shows. They're doing a show in Perth, hooray, a show in Adelaide, and then three shows in New Zealand. They are touring in Wellington, Christchurch, and Auckland.
Beauty.
And they will also be touring with special guests Chaos Divine. Yes, oh, fantastic. Beauty. Chaos Divine are fantastic. They will also be touring with Toe Hider, which is fantastic for me because it'll be the first time I've seen Toe Hider live in about 3 years.
I was going to say that's
and another
even
band called Spook the Horses, which I've never heard of, but sounds like you have, Dave. Tell me all about it.
So, yeah, so Spook the Horses are from New Zealand. They're from Wellington, from memory. They've got three or four albums out or something like that. They are super cool. A really, really cool sort of vibe. I think their last album came out last year from memory. But they released a newer one, a newer song earlier this year from or early 2018. They've sort of got this country noir, progressive country noir, I suppose.
Okay. I've pulled it up on the internet here. They've been described, they've been described as experimental atmospheric post-metal.
Yeah, I wouldn't go so far as to say that they're post-metal. Okay. That's why, like, personally, when I first heard them, I thought they were sort of, a more atmospheric version of something like Neko Case or, you know, some of that sort of dark country jazz kind of stuff, because the guitars are really jangly and sort of twangy and sort of indie rock almost. But that's just me, you know. I mean, I might be talking out my ass, but they're really good though. They are fantastic.
Okay. The other one as well that are announcing, Monuments are also doing a couple of sideshows as well.
Fuck yes.
They're starting their sideshows in New Zealand. They're sort of going the other way, starting in Wellington and Auckland, and then doing the three Progfest shows, and then doing a show in Adelaide and a show in Perth.
Fucking beauty.
So the show will be in Perth, will be on January the 30th, which unfortunately I won't be able to attend, which is rather annoying, but never mind. I'll be seeing them in Sydney anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, did I mention, the various reasons that are unimportant for the show, I will actually be attending Progfest this year.
Woo!
Yes. So get excited, people.
Look out for us both. We're going to be like running around and doing mad shit. Hoggy and me.
Yeah.
Running around, interviewing
people.
The
plan is I hope to be in Sydney for Australia Day itself as well, which would be, I haven't quite worked out how I'm going to juggle that, but I'm sure we will.
So, and of course, these guys as well will be coming to Progfest. You know, Toe Hider and The Ocean and so on and so forth. So if you...
Chaos Divine, yep.
Chaos Monuments, Divine, Monuments. These guys are all going to be part of Progfest, and we're actually going to have a special Progfest edition of the show about next fortnight, where we're going to be basically talking about all the bands that are going to be there. We're going to try and secure a couple of interviews with some of the people that are going to be there, and we're going to just have a big old chat about all of the bands that are coming in. So definitely tune in next week for that one. And after Progfest as well, we'll have a Progfest debrief where we will have chatted with quite a few people at the show, including yourselves if you're there. So come up and say hello.
Absolutely. Tickets available from wildthingspresent.com.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Buy
tickets. Yeah, definitely buy tickets.
Tickets are available from $56.40 for the regular tickets and $135 for the meet and greet.
Yeah.
We spoke last time about how great that meet and greet is. Dave attended that one.
Yes. Absolutely. It's actually really, really good. You get
you going
a lot
to the meet and greet this one this time?
No, I'm not. I'm just doing the normal thing.
Fair enough. But
definitely worth it to meet particularly the lineup for this time. It'll be great.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll probably just do the regular ticket as well, actually. Given that the whole weekend itself is probably going to cost me something like $1,000.
Yeah, well, definitely, definitely. Look at the bright side. You know a guy in Sydney, so at least you don't have to pay for accommodation, right? So,
yay.
Now, a single that you sent me the other day as well, the new Steve Hackett single.
Yes.
The new Steve Hackett single. What did you think of that?
I really liked it. Mm. Everybody, like, people sort of naturally assume that Steve Hackett is still doing like he was in Genesis 40-something odd years ago, but he's not. It's sort of a different thing. There's a lot more different influences going on.
Absolutely.
I heard an interview. I'll just see if I can find it, put it for the show notes, but I did read an interview where he's talking about sort of an influence from sort of American gospel and all that sort of thing, which makes it across... links it across into this song. The song itself is called Under the Eye of the Sun, and I think we can play a little snippet for the good folk out there. What do you think, Dave?
Absolutely. So this is Under the Eye of the Sun from Steve Hackett's forthcoming album.
Under the eye of the sun.
yeah, so that was a little snippet from the new single from Steve Hackett, Under the Eye of the Sun, off the forthcoming album, The Edge of Light, which is going to be, sounds like it's going to be an absolutely fantastic, fantastic song, album rather.
Absolutely. We'll put links in the show notes to link on Spotify, and there is a video out on YouTube, which you can all go and have a listen to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Terrific song. I really enjoyed it. I particularly like Steve Hackett's guitar playing. He's very good.
Yeah, so, and it's not... Yeah. The thing is, it's not particularly... I sit in a bit of a weird space, particularly with my love of prog. I like a lot of the new modern sort of stuff, like, you know, Tesseract and, you know, Monuments and, you know, things that have got really nice clean vocals but are still brutal and heavy and groovy kind of stuff. But then again, I really like this more ethereal stuff as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which generally doesn't go hand in hand. Generally, you get the guys that like the sort of stuff. And then you get the guys that like the other sort of stuff. And it's, yeah, I don't know.
I tend to sort of lean more towards the ethereal type stuff. That's just the personal preference. You tend to sort of go more the other way, as far as I can work out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to the main topic of the day?
I think we should.
It's top five time.
Top five time. So, yeah, so top five from last year or from this year at time of recording. We decided to do our top five albums from the year, a top five gigs. Live shows and so on and so forth, and definitely our top five looking forward to for 2019. Now obviously there's going to be a few other little things in here. There's honorable mentions, there's going to be, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff, maybe some of the worst stuff that we had from that year, but we're just going to see how all this goes. But I think we should probably start with what we asked our wonderful fans to do, or our listeners to do, and that was what their top fives were.
Yes. So I put a shout out in the, we put a shout out in the last show to send us some of your responses to your top five. And boy, did we get many.
Oh, yeah.
We have many. So in reverse chronological order, the number five record, as voted by you guys, was by a band called Damanek. And the album was called In Flight. Now, I hadn't actually heard this album, which might be a recurring theme in this particular trend of albums and stuff. There's so many albums out there that this year that people really like and really recommend. I've got something like, just from my friends on Facebook alone, I think I've got something like 35 albums, different albums to listen to, which I've been slowly getting through. And, you know, there's been a lot of good stuff in there. My top five still hasn't changed, though, but that's because, it's kind of hard to, especially with prog, you kind of got to listen to albums a couple of times before you really sort of get it.
Yeah.
And I would put this one in that category as well. You know, really nice album, but I'm going to need a few more listens to get into that one. So number four is a band called Mystery, an album called Lies and Butterflies. Again, I'm familiar with Mystery. I hadn't heard this particular album. I put that one in the same category as well. You know, I enjoyed it, but I'm going to need a few listens to get behind it. Number three on our list is an album that we have actually spoken about on the show, The Pineapple Thief, Dissolution. That made it to number three.
Kind of not surprised that made it to number three, to be really honest with you, because that is a fucking phenomenal album.
Yep, exactly. Number two on the list, Riverside, Wasteland.
Again, not surprised.
Number one, however, was a bit of a surprise for me, although not necessarily, because I've seen a lot of people really get behind this album, even though it's not one that we necessarily liked. Southern Empire, Civilization.
Yeah.
So that is your number one.
I am kind of surprised, to be really honest with you, that got number one.
Can I say why I'm not particularly surprised?
I'm not offended or anything like that. Not that I really think of being offended is really a bad thing anyway. I mean, you know, don't get leprosy from being offended. But, I'm just kind of surprised. I mean, with all the other ones that came out this year, I don't know. I just feel, I'm just, as I said, I'm surprised. I can't.
Yeah, I'm not that surprised though, because it is an album that is based upon, you know, there are a lot of influences from a lot of music that a lot of people really like. There's obvious Dream Theater influences. There's obvious Transatlantic influences. There's obvious Spock's Beard influences. These are three pretty big modern prog metal bands. Anything you probably need to throw in there was a bit of Tool, and I think you'd get everybody.
Yeah, well, so that's
true. I don't think it's necessarily a surprise that everybody really liked this album. As we said when we reviewed the album several months ago, it's an album that I quite like, but I would like to see where they go and sort of develop more of their own sound.
Always.
What about your top
good.
Five, Dave?
My top five albums of 2018. Number five for me was probably similar to yours, I would say, Riverside, Wasteland. That album is just absolutely brilliant. I thought it was fantastic. Number four, Lux Terminus, The Courage to Be. Now, we chatted about this album on the show, and I think it just kind of blew us both away at how crazy the album actually was and how well it worked. So,
absolutely. Of all of the albums you have recommended to me this year, that one is probably the one, is definitely the one that I would stick at number one.
All right, there
of
you
all,
go.
Of all the albums that you recommended to me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely my favourite.
It's a really good album. I really enjoyed it. Hidden Citizens, Celestine, for number three for me. Hidden Citizens, for those playing at home, were the guys who did like the crazy, you know, epic Hollywood versions of, like, you know, Land of Confusion and all that sort of stuff.
This is another one you recommended to me this year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe not this particular one.
Not this album.
I think it was one previous or something.
Yeah. There was a previous album that I recommended to you, but this was really cool, and I just liked the album. Number two was one that came up as well in our polls on our Facebook and so on and so forth, and that was Joe Bonamassa's Redemption. Being a lover of Joe Bonamassa, I kind of couldn't let this one slip away. But number one for me this year by, I think, a long shot, A Perfect Circle, Eat the Elephant.
Fair enough. That was a really good album.
It was funny. I was listening to it the other night. We were my girlfriend and I were making some stuff for Christmas dinner, and she got home and she was baking a cake and making some desserts and things like that, and she put it on, and I honestly can't think of a bad song off the album. Like, there are songs that were better on the album than others, but there was no bad, and the lyrics were just amazing, a typical of Maynard, you know. It was just such a good album, and I can't really, you know, fault it. And I am, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does on the new Tool album.
So my top five. Number five for me, which is surprisingly the same number five as yours, Riverside. Number four was, it should be a surprise to nobody that it's ended up on my list, Tangled Thoughts of Leaving's new album, No Tether.
Yep, absolutely fantastic.
I'm a big fan of Tangled Thoughts of Leaving. And so their album ended up at number four for me. Number three was Lux Terminus, album we've already spoken about.
But the same. The same as well, which is interesting. It was the same one for both of us.
Number two for me was the David Cross and David Jackson album that I actually recommended to you to listen to, as I think it was the very first recommendation I gave you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
I think it was, yeah. I still love that album. That album has got infinite replay value for me. Fantastic album. And the number one album, which I actually alluded to when I put a small poll out on the Dream Theater Fan Club, which some of you saw, that my number one album of the year was Haken, Vector.
Yep. Understandable.
That is a fantastic album.
What didn't make the top five for you, Hoggy?
There were a couple of albums that didn't make the top five for me. I actually really, did we just talk about Alice in Chains on the show? I think we did,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. That one didn't make the top five for me. That was definitely up there. Another album that my fiance actually turned me on to was an album by a band called Kino.
Yes.
The album was called Radio Voltaire.
Right, okay.
So we'll get to that one. There was another album that she recommended to me as well, an artist called Birdpen. Have you heard that one, Dave?
I have, yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
What did you think of that one?
I quite liked it. I very much enjoyed it. Yeah. Again, not something that I would necessarily put on every day, but, you know, enjoyable nonetheless.
Yeah. What's it called? Oh, yeah, the album was called There's Something Wrong With Everything. So I quite enjoyed that one. Now, I'm just going to head off this criticism right at the top. There's going to be a lot of people out there wondering why we haven't put Greta Van Fleet in our top five, given that we are reviewing a list of albums that came out in 2018. I think it's sort of contractually obligated that you put that record in the top eight, top five.
Well, if you work for Rolling Stone, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I think this could almost be its own episode, to be really honest with you, talking about this, but I don't quite understand what all the hatred's about. I actually really like Greta Van Fleet. Not because, I mean, okay, the kid's got some pipes on him, right? And he sort of does sound like Robert Plant. There's no getting around that. And they do sound like Led Zeppelin, right? And they do ham that up as well. If you've seen any live footage of them and so on and so forth, they've got the grandpa shirts and the things on and the stack amps and the, you know, Les Pauls and all that sort of stuff. So they kind of take it and run with it, which I'm kind of okay with, right? Because at least they're going, yeah, we're kind of like Led Zeppelin. Let's do it anyway, you know?
Steer into the skid, I suppose, is the...
Exactly, yeah. They're drifting is what they're doing. Yeah. That album, though...
I guess the other thing as well, though, if they sounded like Led Zeppelin, but they said, oh, no, we're not sort of, you know, try and sort of not play that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would take them. I don't think anyone would say, yeah, right, sure.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
pull the other one.
Yeah. And I think that the big thing with this was as well, this was the top five albums. That album does not even come close to the top 20 for this year for me.
Totally agree.
It's a good album. I'm not saying it's not. But when you're going up against the likes of, you know, what we've just spoken about, you know, you're up against A Perfect Circle, Joe Bonamassa,
Haken, Riverside, Lux Terminus,
you know, A Dying Machine from Tremonti, which was out this year as well. Silent Planet, When the End Began. The album by Sunchild, Messages from Afar, blah, 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 At the End of Time, or whatever the hell the final 18 words of that title was. You know, The Lydian Collective's Adventure, which came out as well. You kind of can't put them in the same category. That being said, I don't understand why people are so just... I mean, God, they'd be lynch mobbing these kids if they could.
There's a lot of snobbery going on towards them as well, along the lines of, you know, 1973 called, they want their music back sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, and I mean,
this is the major problem that I have with music in general is that there's always mileage to be made in just knocking stuff, saying something. Oh, this record's shit, or this record's terrible, or these group of fans are terrible. Mind you, we have kind of got into a bit of that lately. Yeah, we've kicked a few of those people. Not mentioning names, of course.
Of course, and everyone's guilty of it, right? Everyone's guilty of doing that sort of stuff. But for me, I mean, to answer your question, the reason why that album didn't make it is really simple, and that is it is not a top 20 album for me. I feel we should mention one as well that neither of us mentioned, and it missed out on my top five by a bee's dick. and that was The Unheavenly Creatures by Coheed and Cambria.
Ah, yes. Coheed and Cambria, yeah.
And it missed out by just a tiny... It's really funny. When I sat down to write these and figure out which ones they were, I literally wrote the top five that came to my head straight away. And I've got this sheet of paper here somewhere. Hang on, let me find... Here it is. So the sheet of paper, it says literally the Riverside album, Bonamassa's new one, Hidden Citizens, whatever that was, Lux. It doesn't actually say Lux Termus. It's got Lux Termus written beside it after I figured out what it was, but it's the cool piano one. and APC Eat the Elephant. Like, I've got, you know, that one actually written. So I wrote down the five that came to mind immediately for me. And then I sat down and actually did, you know, a bit of the research and so on and so forth just to sort of refresh my memory. And there's a whole list under here of a whole bunch of other ones as well. That didn't quite make it in. Interestingly, my other half agreed with me on APC and Lux Terminus as well. So, you know, maybe we're doing something right.
I think you are.
What about you? I mean, sorry, we digressed a tiny little bit from what we were talking about there. Yeah, Greta Van Fleet. I mean, why aren't you sort of agreeing with Rolling Stone and, you know, all the people paying lots of money to make people listen to records these days?
Well, my reasons are slightly more snobby than yours. I just sort of go, oh, okay, you know. I mean, the thing is the thing I find with Greta Van Fleet is they're not even an original Led Zeppelin knockoff. didn't we go this through the same process with, like, Wolf Mother? Weren't they supposed to be the new U-Butte Led Zeppelin ripoff band? And then they sort of sunk without a trace.
Yes. I think these guys do it a little bit better. Wolfmother were... I remember seeing a thing with... I think it was Mike Patton. He was playing Big Day Out or one of those festivals. And he says he's getting interviewed and Wolfmother are playing in the background. And he stopped the interview. He goes, I'm sorry. Are you hearing this shit? What year is it? Right? And
like I said, it's like a 1973 call. They want their music back.
Yeah, exactly. And, okay, I kind of agree with that. But, you know, we all know music's cyclical anyway. Like, I mean, and let's be really honest, right? So right at the moment, look at what's – I'm going to look this up.
What's in the charts?
I'm going to look up actually what's in the charts right now. All right, number one, as of time of recording, is Thank You, Next by Ariana Grande. Not spelt the correct way, mind you. It's spelt in text format. Then you've got
of course it is.
Sunflower by Post Malone and Swae Lee, or however you say that. Sweet But Psycho, Ava Max. Without Me by Halsey. Shotgun by George Ezra. Nothing Breaks Like a Heart, which is Mark Ronson featuring Miley Cyrus. Shallow from is Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, so that'd be from that new movie that they've got out. Travis Scott and Drake is the next one, Sicko Mode. Happier by Marshmello and Bell. All I Want for Christmas Is You at number 10. Thank Christ it's only at number 10.
Is that Michael Bublé's one?
No,
is
he Mariah the Christmas Carey's album? One. Mariah Carey's one. But there is in the top... I have to get to – I mean, okay, I know who Ariana Grande is, right? And I know who Halsey is, who's got number four. But I have to Last Christmas at number 18 with Wham for a song that I actually know that's not All I Want for Christmas Is You, because I don't class that as a song.
well, you must know Mark Ronson.
I don't know the song.
Yeah, the song, meh, whatever. I don't know any of these songs. Yeah, All I Want for Christmas. Yeah, well, that's why I asked you, is that Michael Bublé at number 10? Because it seems about the right time for him to do another Christmas album. He does one every year.
You mean Christmas time?
That's why I figured it was one of his.
And then, but you go down to number 30, this is the top 50 in Australia. You get down to number 34, and it's Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So that's made another entrance into the charts again, is it?
Well, yeah, because of the movie and so on and so forth.
Yeah, of course.
But when you compare all of that, DJ Khaled, the Chainsmokers, Lil Pump, and Kanye.
Oh, like Lil Wayne.
And that Kanye West.
That goes to show how old I am. Yep. I was like, oh, like Lil Wayne.
Exactly. You know? Pink. You know, Morgan Evans, Jonas Blue, Kian, Hilltop Hoods. Okay, yeah, they're good. Maroon 5, not too bad. Panic at the Disco, there's a name I know. You know, but when this is what's in the charts, it's kind of not hard to ascertain that a rock band that actually has some kind of appeal, whether they're ripping something off or not, is going to actually make a massive impact, because it is so different from the minimalist synthwave shit that is populating the charts at the moment.
But the other thing as well with these particular, how many of those, I'd be interested to go back to last week's charts. How many of those songs are still there?
It's a good question. I don't know how to go back.
Because I would be willing to hedge a bet and say that the top, minus probably Ariana Grande, that's probably going to be number one again if I had to bet. If I had to bet on something, that would be number one, and the rest of the top 10 would be completely different. Mm.
But mind you,
that's usually how the charts work these days. Stuff goes in at number one and then bombs straight out.
Possible. Mind you, that's the ARIA singles chart. The ARIA albums chart, number one is A Star Is Born, number two is Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen, which is the one from the movie, the thing from the movie. Number three is called Christmas by Michael Bublé.
told
number
you.
Seven is Michael told Bublé. You. Hang on, I just want to see this, if this is... See, now this is really interesting.
So it's like this year's Christmas album at number three and last year's Christmas album at number seven. Is that how that works?
Pretty much, yeah. So you've got Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper at number one, Queen at number two, Christmas is just Michael Bublé at number three, Queen again at number three, The Greatest Showman soundtrack number five, Springsteen on Broadway at number six, Bublé again at number seven, The
Pretty
Greatest
sure that
Showman
Springsteen
Reimagined.
Broadway album's a live album, actually.
Yeah. The Greatest Showman Reimagined, which I'm guessing is like a special edition version or some shit, at number eight. The Platinum Collection by Queen at number nine. And Friends for Christmas by John, No Seriously, It's the Last Time, I Promise This is the Last Time, Tour, Farnham, and Olivia Newton-John.
obviously, John Farnham's run out of money again. He's doing another one of these tours.
And as much as I
tours.
Like, I mean, I really like, I actually really like Michael Bublé. It's hard not to like Michael Bublé. You can't not like Queen. I mean, you know, The Greatest Showman can
and,
go
you know,
fuck
big,
off. But
big movie comes out and all the albums start springing up to the top 10 again. Like, that should surprise anybody.
Exactly. I have a bit of an issue when Kamikaze by Eminem is number 19 and Nature by Paul Kelly is at number 21, though, behind all of those.
Yeah, but this is why I wanted to know what was on the previous week. Is Eminem's record on the way up or on the way down?
I suspect
it's on the way up.
I thought it was
on the way down.
No, last week it was number 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Last week was at 20. When it was number 16 when it was released, when it was just released, and... well, it was number one when it was at the highest position was number one. But interestingly, it didn't enter at number one. So,
okay. So it entered down at 16, went up to number one, 20, 19.
Guessing something like that, yeah. So
okay, yeah. This is what I'm saying about there's so much of that where stuff goes in at number one and then it just there's no carryover, it just drops straight out again.
Yeah.
What I would love to know and what I suspect they will never, ever tell us in a month of Sundays what each of those numbers represent in actual units sold. And that, and also as well, that's units sold to record stores, not units bought in record stores. Because you ended up in a situation where one of the Australian Idol singers once, I'm going to have to figure out the details and get back to you and put some links in the show notes. I'm pretty sure one of the Australian Idol singers went platinum in the first week or something, but then they ended up with thousands and thousands of copies of this particular artist's record just sitting in a warehouse doing fuck all.
Really? Is that how it works?
Yeah, that it's units sold to record stores, not units bought in record stores. So the record stores would buy 50,000 of these things and they go, hey, platinum, but it's not really platinum.
Yeah, right.
Because then they just end up in the thing.
Interestingly, that Ariana Grande Thank You Next, which is still spelt wrong, I don't care how you look at it, has been
look
at number
at us
one
being
for
completely
6 weeks.
Grumpy omen. Yeah, okay, 6 weeks. Fair enough.
But still, really?
Mm.
6 weeks?
Anyway, should we cut to our top five stuff that we saw live?
We should.
So what was your top five live concerts that you saw in 2018, Dave?
Top
what have you
five
got?
Live shows for 2018 brought to you by me. Number five was Kalina's Horse at the Factory Theatre here in Sydney. Fucking brilliant. James Norbert-Ivani and Opus of a Machine, who both supported brilliant, and obviously Caligula's Horse. Being able to hear... fuck, what's the name of it? Caligula's horse.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank as well.
Caligula's horse. Hang on, trying to figure out the name of the fucking thing. Inertia. Being able to hear Inertia live was just incredible. It was just amazing. Really, really good. So definitely that one. Number four, Above and Beyond at the Hall of Industries.
Now, was this the one you complained about on the Gig Etiquette episode with the terrible police presence and the horrible organisation and shit?
Yep. And that's the reason why it's at number four instead of at number three. And the reason it's not one and two, it will be evident as soon as I say them. Unfortunately, I mean, to see Above and Beyond was just incredible, and to actually be there and see that. They didn't play their biggest song that everybody loved, but that was kind of made up by everyone singing it at the end, completely a cappella. It was really cool. Great, great gig. Number three, Sleep Makes Waves at Manning Bar. That was just insane. Absolutely. Now, was that
the one
insane.
They did a tour earlier this year, which I unfortunately missed because I was overseas, mm-hmm. in first world problems. Was that the one where they had the original guitar player, Kit, back in the band?
Yep.
Hey! Yeah. I'm pissed off I missed that show.
It was really nice. Good. It was really cool. It started with like this big presentation video with basically all of Australian prog rock royalty speaking about the band. So you had Kenny from Carnival and the guitarists from Carnival. You had all the boys from Cog, boys from Butterfly Effect, you know, all just basically talking shit about the band. It was just great. It was so cool.
That's fantastic.
Number two, Stephen Wilson. Because Stephen Wilson.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a fantastic.
need we say anymore?
Exactly. Before we get to number one, I'll do a couple of little honourable mentions because this year has been a great year for gigs. So there was Story of the Year, who are one of my favourite like screamo bands from when I was like 16, 17. I've seen them like four times now, and they're just great. They're so good. The Contortionist. I mean, I don't really need to say any more. Mammal, who was supported by Osaka Punch. And I mean, the Osaka Punch guys are just the shit, you know. And of course, Progfest. I just didn't want to put Progfest in there because it's a festival, you know. It's kind of unfair when you're saying, oh, yeah, so this you're sort of condensing down Leprous, Voyager, all the other bands that were there on the day, Genetics and, you know, Osaka Punch and all the rest of the guys that were there into sort of one little thing, which I had a bit of an issue with. So I wasn't going to put that in there. However, number one, which should come as a surprise to fucking no one, Roger Waters.
Yes.
Because that was, I mean, that's still my top gig of all time. And I mentioned that earlier. And McCartney would have been in this list if he was this year as well, but he wasn't. He was last year, so he misses out.
Yeah, that was like December time in 2017,
was,
I think it was.
Yeah, it was December. Yeah. And then Waters was February this year. So,
yep.
So how about you? Top five shows.
Alrighty. Top five shows for me. I've also put number five. I've got a festival set, Riverside, when they played at Midsummer Prog Festival in Valkenburg.
Mm-hmm.
We also I just realized actually in my list I actually have three concerts that I saw in the Netherlands. So we have at number four, we have the Rolling Stones. Probably a bit of a surprise to many actually, but I really, really enjoyed that Rolling Stones gig. I thought it was actually very good. Sound at that gig was top notch. Number three, which I described in the Summer of Prog episode as the biggest surprise of the year at that point for me, which was Roger Hodgson, which I saw him at Rotterdam. He's, as we've mentioned many times before, coming to Australia later this year. Get your tickets. It's a really good show. Number two for me is Roger Waters. This one I'm going to, because I saw him three times this year, I'm going to pick the one that I saw him from the front row in Amsterdam because it was just It was just a... number one, which should be, again, I'm going to put in the surprise, is none category, King Crimson.
Mm-hmm.
The gig on which I saw him and saw them play at Krakow.
Absolutely.
I do have a couple of honourable mentions as well.
Yep.
I actually really enjoyed when I saw Tesseract play here in Perth.
Yep.
A couple of months back.
Yep.
That was a really good show. When I, the other one I'm actually going to call out as well as an honourable mention was Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, right.
And I saw them at Madcool. I'm not a particularly big Queens of the Stone Age fan, but their live show was really entertaining.
That's good. That's good. And you managed to avoid being kicked in the head as well. So that's positive.
Yeah,
as
that
well.
Was the other, that was a big surprise to me. It was how rowdy the pit was actually, but we were sort of off to one side, so we were out of the main squash.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Josh on from the front of the stage yelling at the security guards to let people into the special VIP section, which was on stage left, which for their performance was almost empty. And there were a bunch of people standing around at the back. And he was like, basically, fuck you, security guards, let them all in.
Mm-hmm.
Which eventually I think they did. I don't know. I couldn't see, but he stopped complaining about it. So I assume they did. So I assume he did. The Sons of Apollo. When I saw them at Big Prog, my friend, I thought that was a really good, that was a really, really good show as well. Hoping they come to Australia. Please come to Australia. And again, because, you know, I always love watching these guys play, and I think I've seen them play something like 25 or 30 times. Tangle Thoughts of Leaving.
Yep.
They did a show where they were headlining at Badlands, and that was a real, it was a really, really good gig. So there's my top five.
Beautiful.
Any surprises, omissions that you wanted to call out?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think that, that absolutely nails it because it was just such a great... I mean, this year has just been brilliant, really, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so...
Yeah, this has been a really, really great year for music and people on the internet have probably seen me involved in a few arguments over the time, which we'll get to someday.
Yes, yes.
People who want to say that all new music is crap and all... The Rolling Stone magazine wrote an article about it as well as why music sucked in 2018, to which, you know, I think the my two-word summary to that article should be a, you know, shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
Well, I mean, music did suck in 2018 if you listen to what Rolling Stone listens to.
Yes, or just sort of turn on the radio and not really pay too much attention to searching out music for yourself.
Absolutely.
But I don't think anybody who listens to this show is in that category.
No, I don't think so.
No.
So
you can't have the light without a bit of shade.
Uh-huh.
So I suppose we should probably talk about some of the bad things that happened in music.
Yeah, let's start throwing
experience.
Some shade.
Yes.
So for me, there were two really big things because obviously I wasn't overseas and didn't really pay super close attention to a lot of stuff that was happening over in the US or in, you know, other areas, Europe and so on and so forth. For me, not paying
attention to America. American, especially American politics, is vital for mental health, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Until they impeach the orange fucker, then I won't bother.
My personal favorite thing is at the moment Donald Trump is doing his. Well, I'm gonna shut down the government because we're not getting a wall. We're not getting a wall. So hang on a second, mate. You said that the Mexicans were going to pay for that wall. Why the fuck are you shutting down the government? Because you can't get the funding to build it. The tax, fuck off. You know.
And also as well, I think the Democrats wanted to give him like $1.5 billion. And I think even the nicest, most conservative estimate for the border wall is like $60 billion.
Yeah.
That's just to build it. Never mind maintaining it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I know. Anyway. coming soon to you, another episode of the 21.9 podcast. So 21.16 podcast. So the lockout laws or the lack of the repeal and what they've done. And there's been a whole bunch of other things that have come to light in the last little while. We haven't really touched on them for a little bit. Businesses are starting to, you know, basically, well, they've already got the shits with everything that's going on and so on and so forth. So they and what they've done to this city has really been highlighted this year since I've got back into, you know, a lot of the music photography and obviously starting this podcast and being able to speak to a lot more artists and so on and so forth. It's really highlighted what that has done to the industry and to the country so far as music is concerned in this city, which is just atrocious. So that's definitely definitely a big one for me.
Absolutely.
The other thing, and we whinged and bitched and moaned about this a little while ago, but that Polyphia show.
oh, boy, did we whinge and bitch about that. I think we dedicated half the episode to that particular gig.
We did. That's why I'm not going to sort of harp on it here. You can go back and listen to the episode if you do want to sort of listen to what we say. But I'm still kind of shocked at just how atrocious that gig was. Not from a technicality standpoint or anything like that, but just from the attitude of Polyphia, which I thought was just atrocious. So,
yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the attitude of the bands there, because my sort of, you know, lowlights of 2018, all three of them are actually revolving around live concerts. So, and sort of three aspects of it that, you know, just terrible behavior. So the big one for me was just Massive Attack at Madcore Festival, who just decided they weren't going to show up, which is sort of like the apex of just shitty diva behavior. Still, here we are 6 months after the gig, still haven't heard an official word from the band why they didn't bother to turn up. So I'm just going to blame them for it. Fuck them. Def Leppard, when I went to see Def Leppard, I mean, that one, that concert was just shitty fans. Just, you know, why would you spend, you know, those tickets were not cheap. Why would you spend so much money just to go in and just be drunk and dance around like fuckwits? Anyway,
yeah,
complained about that enough. And then just, you know, the Guns N' Roses gig at Barcelona, I was so looking forward to that gig, and it was just such a bummer because the sound of the concert was just so bad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Not good. Not good. But back out of the, we'll call this like a sandwich, you know, good things, shit thing in the middle, and then a nice piece of bread on the end to sort of figure this out. So 2019, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, I'm looking forward to many, many things. Definitely looking forward to Progfest.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a big one. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hearing people's reaction to the new Dream Theater record once it comes out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
As we mentioned on the previous episode,
mm-hmm.
obviously I've already had the chance to listen to it,
yep.
thanks to Inside Out Music sending me an advance copy.
Yep.
I really love the record. I hope you all do as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Looking forward to being able to talk about that more openly than we're able to at the moment.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to sort of, you know, listening to it and actually figuring out for myself what my favorite tracks are and everything. And Simo as well. I know I caught up with him on Christmas night, actually, and we had a chat about that, and he's really looking forward to that as well. So, yeah, stay tuned for an episode where we're going to be doing a full reaction to it. Well, probably not a full reaction, but we're going to be dedicating an entire episode to it. So,
absolutely. And then the other thing I'm looking forward to as well, Night of the Prog.
Uh-huh.
I haven't been to that. With the unfortunate demise this year of Beat Prog, my friend, that festival is now gone, which I'm very sad about because it was a fantastic gig, and my fiancé and I have totally not been looking into other concert proceedings in Barcelona to try and get back to Barcelona. We haven't done that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Based upon the single that we talked about at the top of the show, Steve Hackett, I'm looking forward to his new record.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that. I'm hoping he'll be able to come back to Australia again. I missed his last little tour that he did. I don't think it was really a tour, actually. It was just a couple of shows in Melbourne. I missed those. I really want him to come back and play again.
Mm-hmm.
He is out and about at the moment doing a tour, or will be out and about with a tour doing Selling England by the Pound.
Right, okay.
A full sort of production of that. Craig Blundell is actually going to be the drummer for that record. I don't know if did you hear that one, Dave, that he's leaving Stephen Wilson's band? He's got an offer to go play with Steve Hackett?
Yeah, I did. I did hear that, actually. I heard the rumbling on that one.
I mean, there was so much great music that came out of 2018, even stuff now. I mean, here we are at the very, very end of 2018 as we're recording, and I still have so many albums to listen to.
Yeah.
I also got sent... there's a great Reddit subreddit. There's a great subreddit, actually, for post-rock.
Yes.
And someone over there has compiled a list of essentially every post-rock record that got released this year.
Right.
So stuff like Bear the Mammoth is on there.
Yeah.
There's a few other ones on there. I think Russian Circles is on there as well.
Yep.
I think they had an album. Yeah. So there's a huge list. There's something like 100 records on that list.
Yeah, right.
that I'll certainly be picking and choosing from. Obviously, not all post-rock is necessarily stuff that I like listening to. Some of it can be a bit of a drag at times, but yeah, there's enough in there that I can certainly listen to. So if that's 2018, I mean, 2019, you'd hope would be the same. And the big one, I mean, the biggest thing of all that I'm looking forward to is finally getting to see Dream Theater again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I haven't seen them. I worked it out, actually. It's been 4 years since I last saw them.
Yeah, wow. Okay.
Yeah. The last time I saw them was actually when I saw them with you in Sydney.
Yeah. So that was the Luna Park gig.
Yep.
Yeah. So time flies when you're having fun.
Indeed. And when you're gallivanting around the world.
Exactly, yeah.
What about you, Dave? What's your list look like?
So I'm going to do this in ascending order. So from things that I am looking forward to and then things I'm looking forward to, like, you know, a kid getting his braces off. So Progfest, obviously, because Progfest, and it's going to be absolutely fantastic. And again, everyone needs to buy tickets because it's going to be fucking amazing. Rammstein, world tour, a new album.
They've got a new album coming out.
They do. They have a brand new album coming out. It's going to be coming out in 2019.
Because this has been, they haven't done an album for quite a while, haven't they?
Yeah, the last one was Liebe ist für alle da, which is...
Oh, yeah, with that song with the big single on that one, Pussy, I think was that one.
Yes, yeah, and then also Ich tue de Veer, because that song is just absolutely fantastic. I love it so much. But they've announced a world tour, and they've announced a new album, and Hell or High Water ain't stopping me from going to that. So I am going to be there right at the front. I'm going to get my eyebrows burnt off and I'm going to very much enjoy it.
Possibly you'll get something shot at you.
Oh, probably.
Doesn't he run around? Does he like cannons and stuff, like water cannons and jizz cannons and all that sort of thing?
Yeah. Big dildos and shit. It's going to be great.
You reckon they'll come to Australia with that?
Yeah.
I mean, they've done enough festival stops here. I mean, it seems like probably every year or so they were out here with Big Day Out or Soundwave or something there for a while.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I assume the following here is big enough.
Absolutely. They'd pack out. I reckon they'd pack out ANZ Stadium, I reckon. Mostly because it would have to be an outdoors gig because there's no way OHNS or WHS or whatever the fuck it's called now in this country would let them let bloody fire cannons off inside an indoor sort of thing.
Absolutely not. Definitely not. Yeah, the fire marshal will have that one shut down very quickly.
Mm-hmm. New Tool album. If they
ever get around to doing it.
Yes. They're saying it's going to be the first quarter. So I'm picking they'll just get to a date and they'll just drop it. I don't reckon they'll do a single thing and all that sort of stuff. I reckon they'll just go, by the way, guys, here's the new album. And
didn't Beyonce do that? Didn't she just drop an album out of nowhere?
Yeah, and I mean, if she can do it, you know.
Tool, let's be honest. I mean, Tool, they are the sort of band who aren't particularly, you know, they're not interested in the whole sort of media hype sort of thing. So it definitely sounds like something they would do.
Yeah.
Where they would just go, surprise, here's the record, bang.
Surprise, cockfags. I'm really looking forward to that because I'm a massive Tool fan. Massive Tool fan. And obviously, thing I am looking forward to the most is Dream Theater in New York. / new Dream Theater album, but seeing Dream Theater in New York on the fucking Scenes from Memory reunion show. I shouldn't say reunion show, but
yeah, I was going to say it's not really a reunion show.
The Scenes from Memory anniversary show. That's going to be really special for a few reasons. So I'm fucking keen to see Dream Theater in New York. It's just going to be
that's going to be really good fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will be doing an episode from over there as well. I'm going to try and get some local people on the ground to do an episode with. So
that'll be good fun.
We'll see how
that
goes.
I've already sort of talked to because I'll be seeing Dream Theater in Sofia in Bulgaria on the same tour. This is the US leg and the European leg. I've sort of reached out to various people and sort of see if I could try and do a little interview with one of them, with one of the members of the band on the road. So
yeah, absolutely.
If I do ever manage to nail that one down, you'll be the first to know.
Yep, absolutely. That'd be great. Right. So there are our, top things from this year. And obviously news and all the other bits and bobs. Next week we're gonna be doing our album reviews, which was given in a last time. And we're also going to be continuing on with our new discovery segment where we recommend each other local bands. And obviously by extension, yes, you guys as well.
Yes, exactly. And we'll also be sort of giving a bit of a preview for Progfest. We said we were going to do that. Yeah. So we'll be doing a little preview of Progfest. We've sort of touched on a couple of the bands already. But we will also be sort of doing a bit of a deeper dive on a few other ones as well. Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us all the way through 2018. And I hope you all continue to join us through 2019.
Absolutely. And stay tuned. I mean, this year is going to be a massive year. In the prog scene, new Dream Theater, new Tool, hopefully, new Rammstein, new everything. And it is going to be absolutely fantastic. So thanks very much for sticking by us and listening in with us and listening to us crap on for ages. It's not crapping on. It's an amazing amount of content.
See, Dave, you're getting it. Hey!
Exactly. So thank you once again from myself for listening in 2018. My name is David Ellis.
And my name is Alexander Hogg, and we'll see you all next time.